There are 24 judge seats in Minnesota's 9th district. This includes 17 counties as well as 3 tribal nations. Of those 24 judge seats, 12 are up for election and only 2 of them are contested. And one of them is Judge Charles Halverson, who joins us now on KEXE KBXE. Judge, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you very much for having me on.
You are welcome. So give us an idea of your background that led you to becoming a judge.
How far back do you want to go?
Did you know as a child you wanted to be a judge, for instance?
No, I think that happened later in life. I did kind of know early on that I wanted to be a lawyer. And so that was kind of in my forethought. Sitting as a judge, I don't think happened until much later in life. So, and I was encouraged to consider it by people who thought that I would do a good job at it and had the experience to do it. But I thought long and hard about whether I wanted to do it because I knew there would be some aspects of my private practice that I would lose and give up. And that mostly was the relationship with my client. But I made the decision that I would serve.
So for those who don't know, for voters, I think hearing that a judge is first appointed by a governor and then runs for election later, could you kind of explain what that whole process is like?
Well, I would describe it as kind of a vetting process. They post an opening, and when I applied this time, there was 3 openings, 2 in Crow Wing County, 1 in Cass. I was encouraged to apply by a former member of the Judicial Selection Committee, so I submitted my application. You have to detail all of your experience, your work in the community, your other, you know, community involvements, volunteer work, other projects that you're involved in. You have to give a list of attorneys who were on important cases in an adversarial position. You have to give judges that you appeared in front of, and not necessarily on a frequent basis where you may have a better relationship. And then that goes into the Judicial Selection Committee, which is made up of people all over the state who review it. And then they narrow that down to a group of candidates that they would like to interview. And then you go through that interview process at the local basis. And then out of that local basis, they select finalists that are ultimately interviewed by the governor. And on that finalist, the governor's not bound by that group, but generally the governor will pick who they think is going to be the best candidate out of that group. But you sign releases, they do background checks, they make sure you paid your taxes, they know everything about you that they can know, most of which voters wouldn't even have access to.
So part of being a judge, it's a nonpartisan position, so you can't publicly endorse any candidates, say, in the upcoming elections in November. Is that something difficult to give up, or why do you think that's important to being a judge?
Well, I think it's important because of impartiality, and especially now, you know, there seems to be the differences in where people sit has become far more polarized. It's black and white. It used to be very gray. You know, you wouldn't know which party anybody stood for. And traditionally in Minnesota, there's a lot of people that flip-flopped and voted on both sides of the party line. And as an attorney, I didn't necessarily want to affiliate strongly one way or the other because I didn't want people deciding whether they were going to hire me or not hire me because of strong positions. So for me, that transition was relatively easy.
We are talking with Judge Charles Halverson today. He is up for election in November in Minnesota's 9th District. Treatment courts have a lot to do with the work you do. Can you tell us what they are?
Yes, I can. Treatment courts, we have really kind of 2 kinds. Sometimes they're strictly for offenses that are DUIs. Others are strictly drug offenses. Some are kind of a combination. Depends on numbers, depends on how large the county is. It's a program that started out it's probably about 10 years ago. So you identify people who are at risk to potentially reoffend or can identify that they have a significant chemical dependency problem. They're kind of a combination of intensive supervision. So you're going to have contact with a supervising probation agent at least weekly, if not more than 1 time a week. There's like a group type situation because you meet with other people. The group will will can impose sanctions if there's a violation of the rules. You're going to get support out of that group. You're going to get guidance out of that group. And in theory, if everyone in the group is successful, you're actually going to develop a peer group of people who have also made the choice to find sobriety. And so you're not alone. And that combination package is different from what we were doing traditionally. Is people would commit an offense, get convicted or plead guilty, be placed on probation. They had to develop their own relationship with the probation agent. They had to figure out their own situation about, do I go to treatment or not go to treatment? They had to, on their own then, sort out, how am I going to be successful if being sober is going to be a priority for me? And when we put people in those situations, more people fail because they're doing it on their own. And one of the things that you're going to hear from people involved in treatment is for people to break down this barrier that if you want to make positive change in your life, you have to rely on other people. And when we force people to figure it out on their own, and then we're upset or surprised when they failed, we shouldn't have been. And that's the key component to the sobriety course, is you're not alone. You have other people that are in similar situations to you, other people whose enabling group may be within their own family circle, which makes it difficult. You have other people who have had some of the same bumps in the road, how drugs and alcohol have created disruption in their life, so they understand when you talk about it because they've been down that same road. And then you have people in the support part of the treatment group that can help guide and get people where they want to go and support them in getting them there, as opposed to letting them just figure it out on their own. So it's a way better concept. You support public safety because you have intensive supervision. You support the person individually so you can help get them to where they want to be, and they're not going to have to do it alone. So it's a fantastic program. I first had clients start going there as an attorney, and then I started doing some volunteer work in the program. So I've had contacts with wellness court programs in multiple counties. They're all a little bit different based on their makeup, but the goal and the structure is somewhat the same. And I've had some clients who have taken that route who have had now years of sobriety. They found success in that model where they weren't able to find success in other models, and on a higher percentage people having. So dealing with chemical dependency has never been a perfect cure historically anyway, because we're dealing with the human condition. But when we support people in the nature that those type programs do, we increase the numbers of success. And it's hard to argue when something works.
I wonder if you can tell us a little bit about how you are approached. This is the first time you've been up for election since you were appointed. How are you approaching a campaign? This is running for a judge is very different than what we might think of someone running for the state legislature. So how are you doing it?
Well, in some ways it's the same. It's just how you campaign is different. We can't take strong positions about issues. We can, to a degree, talk about our experience and what qualifies us, but you just really don't get into what most people think they want to hear from anybody running for office. You know, people, you know, are you a conservative? Are you a liberal? How do you feel about that? And because as judges, we don't know what's going to come on our plate in the future for cases. And the last thing you'd want to do is make some sort of statement to try to make somebody happy, and then it impacts your ability to handle a case in the future. And that's one of the reasons why you can't make strong statements or talk about issues. Part of the purpose of the bench and our constitutional system is to maintain neutrality. It supports the concept of fairness. And when you look at it in those terms, it makes perfect sense. It just makes campaigning a little bit of walking a tightrope, because people want to know where you stand, and they get a little frustrated when you really can't tell them.
So tell us a little bit about what it's been like as a judge during this pandemic. How have you kept your staff and the courtroom safe and the people who come before you?
Well, it's been evolving. It's been changing. Most of it is by video. So we started out using one kind of video method called VMR. I personally didn't like it. We switched to Zoom court used to be scheduled where you'd have 9 o'clock and it was a cattle call. You know, you'd have however cases were on, especially criminally, and they'd all show up at 9 and then sit there until you got done with the people that all showed up. Well, now we have to go with individual time slots. So you'll have a 9, maybe a 9:10, 9:20, or if they're in 15-minute increments. And so I think we're processing less cases. But most of the time, my staff is remote. They could either be in their office or they could be at home. I generally go in the courtroom. I started out doing it at home, but when you have the camera and it starts picking up some of the background stuff in your house, you know, people would start asking you questions about things in the background of your house, and it's kind of your personal space, and I wasn't completely comfortable with that. So at least when I'm in the courtroom and the camera's on me, I'm there in a robe, it looks like I'm on a bench, it looks like I'm in a courtroom, it projects a more professional and, for lack of a better term, legitimate perception. And then I generally will have one support staff in the courtroom and everyone else remotely. And people appear by Zoom and we conduct court and we go on. It's just different. It takes longer, but it's the only thing we have, because I don't know how comfortable anybody would want to be having 20 people show up for a court appearance.
Yeah. You know, you described that the way that you look on Zoom and having, you know, so that you appear like a judge and not in your personal life. For a lot of people, if we end up going to court for something, that's a pretty stressful time. So someone listening to us right now, do you have advice for that whole process and how to go about it?
I would encourage people, because we're having people, both attorneys and litigants, coming on in Zoom that are treating it far more casually than they probably would have if they were going into a courtroom. There are people who have been drinking, smoking, not always closed 100%, have the dog sitting on their lap. In some ways it's more relaxed, which I think helps people, puts them more at ease. But at the same time, some people just take it too casually. Right. So, I mean, there's pros and cons there, but the bottom line is it's about trying to give people an opportunity to have their case in court, and it's the best mechanism we have at this time. And if people aren't completely buying into the proper way that they should be dressed or anything else, it's about getting the work done. It's the most important thing at some point. And just hopefully when we go back to being in courtrooms that some of that casualness doesn't spill over. The one upside, I think, for litigants, when we are scheduling things in the time slots that they are, I have a lot of people who are taking their break from work and doing their court appearance, where the old method, they would have had to take a whole morning off. And now they don't lose a half a day of paycheck. They can fit it into their break and not miss that half a day of paycheck, sometimes a whole day of paycheck if you have to travel for court. So a lot of people are Zooming in from work sites. And if they're dressed in their work clothes and they're at work, I don't have an issue with that.
Right.
And they're earning more money, which is in everybody's best interest. So
part of the reason we're having these kinds of conversations like you and I are having is to remind folks that it is not just the president who is running in November, that there are people running for all kinds of offices. And I think a lot of times people forget that about that judge seats are important. And we want to remind you to turn that ballot over to vote for judges. If you want more information on Judge Halverson, you can look at his website. It's Judge Halverson. It's HalverSon.com. And I thank you for your time today. It was good to talk with you.
Good to talk with you, Heidi. Thank you for having me on.